Spring turkey season is upon us, and don't be caught out in the woods without having Onyx Hunt on your phone. One feature Onyx has that is often overlooked for turkey hunting is their recent imagery filter with their elite memberships. This imagery is updated week to week, and it comes in extremely handy, especially when you're trying to find these gobble zones where these turkeys will go out in a high spot on a fresh clear cut and strut around all day long. Actually, I was just looking at it on Onyx where the timber company just came into Andrew's Club and did a very small clear cut along this creek. And I can see the high spots on the topographical map, but also I can see exactly where they mulch. And those are going to be hot spots for finding gobblers, especially mid-morning after they get off their hens, getting up on these little high spots in this fresh, small clear cut along the creek and strutting and gobbling all day long. If you want to give Onyx a try, you can actually download it for free, try it for 7 days. And if you decide to purchase, you can use the promo code Southern and save on your premium and elite memberships. So going into this turkey season, know where you stand with Onyx. Well, guys, we have some exciting news for you from Vortex about their brand new eyewear, their Banshee and Jackal sunglasses. Me and Andrew have had these for a few weeks now, right before the release, and we've been extremely impressed. They're awesome glasses, guys. And listen, if you're needing some new sunglasses, not only do they have the VIP warranty, but they're tough as crap, guys. Scratch resistant eyewear, it's extremely important. And also, they have safety features as well. So when you're out shooting at the range, again, these are rated glasses, so you are going to be more than protected when you're at the range. But they also look fantastic when you're out around town. So right now, Vortex has some special pricing on their website, which is vortexoptics.com for the new eyewear. But also, if you use the code Southern20, you get to save even more on this special pricing for right now at vortexoptics.com. Again, check out the new eyewear from vortexoptics.com and use the promo code Southern20 to save on their brand new eyewear.
If you live in the Gulf Coast region, you need to find yourself at the EcoWild Expo May 10th through the 12th in Mobile. It is the premier outdoor expo for the Gulf Coast region, and we're going to be there. We're going to have a booth. We're super excited about it. Can't wait to meet you guys that live down there. We absolutely love the Gulf Coast region, so to be a part of this show, we're super excited about. We're going to have past podcast guests there at our booth for you to talk to, guys who are relevant for your area, who you can talk to, you can pick their brain, you can joke with them, laugh with them, tell them your story, whatever you want to do. It's going to be awesome time. We're already working on some past podcast guests, but hey, if you live in this area and you have a suggestion for someone you want to see at that show, write in and we'll see if we can get them. There's going to be all kinds of exhibitors at the show that are focused on hunting, fishing, conservation, and recreation. There's going to be activities for the whole family there. They got axe throwing, archery. They're going to have our podcast booth. And then for the kids, they got touch tanks, a honeybee exhibition, a raptor show, kids fishing tank, BB gun range, and a butterfly house. So you're going to love it. Your kids are going to love it. It's going to be an awesome time. So head on over to EcoWildExpo.com to get more information on the show and to go ahead and grab your tickets. And hey, mark it on your calendar. May 10th through the 12th. Be there. We want to see you and we're excited to talk to you. So we'll see you at the EcoWild Expo this May 10th through the 12th at the Mobile Convention Center in Mobile, Alabama. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. Today, doing a little outro episode for the throwback episode that we did on Monday with Mr. Mike Pentecost. And hey, shout out to Upstate Repurposed for this freaking awesome sign we got back here behind us. This thing looks phenomenal. You remember he reached out to us and he was like, hey, can y'all send over your logo? I want to do something for you guys. And we're like, yeah, sure. And then like, I don't know, a couple months later, this thing comes rolling in, and we were like, oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's something you'd pay a couple $100 for at least, right?
Probably more than that. Yeah, it's legit.
Yeah, it's super nice. So, Upstate Repurposed on Instagram. Y'all go follow him. He, in fact, wrote a note that said that he was not looking for a shout-out, but we're going to give him one anyways because he wrote a super nice note. We're actually going to frame the note and put it in here, too. But, yeah, thanks, man, for the sign. Adds to the studio. If you're not watching on YouTube, you need to. Because now we have this glorious wooden sign. And, you know, if I had told him to design a sign, I don't know if I could have explained it much better than, like, what he did. Because yeah. I like that. It's like a black walnut look, cause so it kind of looks like a gun stock. You know, mm-hmm. Like, I got a lot of guns that are, like, that color, like that wood.
Yeah.
And it's just phenomenal. I'm very proud of this sign.
What gun you got that's that color?
Oh, I got a Remington 30-06. I got two Remington 1100s that are like that color.
You get two 1100s? I thought you had one.
I got a 12-gauge 1100 and a 20-gauge 1100.
Man, you high-dollar SOB.
I didn't buy them. I inherited them suckers.
I've looked to buy some, and God, they're expensive.
Well, those were both purchased in the one. I think one was purchased in the late 70s, and one was purchased in the late 80s.
Yeah,
the early 80s.
I went to a local pawn shop, and they had a couple, and I'm like, I'm good.
Oh, I will never. Someone will have to pry those out of my cold dead hands. I will never sell those.
One they had was like $1,200, and yeah. I'm like,
dude, they're the best guns ever. I freaking love. As far as shotguns go, mm-hmm. hard to beat. You go to any dove shoot, anywhere. In the southeast, and there's going to be an 1100 on that field. Just always an 1100 or two. You never know.
And he got a couple of waterfowl guys bringing their Black Eagles.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, what are you doing, bud?
We got the old humpbacks, the A5s out there, too.
Oh, yeah.
That's a beautiful gun. I don't have one of those yet. But
I was an inherit one.
You are? Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. You better not get rid of it.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever been shot. My granddad bought it. I don't know if he ever really shot it. It's got the original case, all the original paperwork, two barrels, because one's a fixed full barrel, one's a modified barrel, or maybe improved cylinder, and got the original case and everything it came with.
Oh, like, yeah.
Bought as a kit.
Yeah, that 1100, the 20-gauge specifically, that's the gun I grew up shooting, and that one is truly an extension of my body. Like, that gun is just, I pick it up, it feels so right.
Which one cracked the stock?
That one. Look, I've forgiven her. But Tiffany dropped.
She's
it.
Right through this door, so don't talk too loud.
She knows. She knows what she did. She felt really bad. She dropped it on the tile floor, and a little piece of the stock chipped off. And I'm not gonna go put a new stock on it because it's like an heirloom. Mm-hmm. So I just wood glued that sucker together, and it's probably not the best way to fix it. But you know, it is what it is. So now it's semi-retired. You know, I take it out on very special occasions, and I take precautions because I think it'll be fine, but I don't want to be out in the woods and shoot it and have that piece of the stock chip off and lose it because it was just laying on the ground. I was able to glue it back on, but I don't know how good, you know, that glue would stabilize or whatever. You
just Elmer Fudd it, just covered in some duct tape.
Actually, that's what I do. I get a big piece of tape and I tape it in case it does come loose. It'll at least be stuck to the piece of tape. So
that's terrible.
Anyways, we don't beat brush with it anymore. We'll put it that way. We'll go on a nice, relaxing dove shoot with it, where I'm stationary and I'm not using the gun as like a brush machete or whatever.
Just pushing brush out of the way, and some light dove loads too. You know,
Yeah, nothing crazy.
Probably don't run some real hot TSS through it.
No, well, they don't take 3-inch shells anyways. Uh-huh. So most TSS is a 3-inch shell. So they're 2 3/4 inch, and both of them are 2 3/4 inch max, and both of them have fixed chokes. So the 12 is a full choke, the other one's an improved cylinder. And that's just what you got, man. So, anyways, wow, that was a tangent. Jacob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing real good. So, this is the first episode we've recorded in a minute.
Yeah, you've been in South Dakota.
Yeah, South Dakota, and then back here for a little bit, and went to an antique lure show with my granddad, and all kinds of stuff. So it's been a crazy kind of hectic couple weeks. I'll tell you one thing, South Dakota. I was waiting to say this on the podcast. You know, you talk about I don't take cold showers. You do a cold shower. Nick does a cold shower. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Ain't none of y'all taking a cold shower in South Dakota. It was the coldest tap water I have ever felt, ever, dude. I mean, it was like winter late. It was like going down to like Lake Gunnersville in January and putting your hand down the water. It was it was so cold. I'm like, ain't nobody up here taking a cold shower. You don't need a cold plunge, man. Just turn it cold and hop in. Just freeze to death.
Dude.
Come out hyperthermic. I mean, it was crazy. So
you didn't challenge Nick to do it?
No, I brought it up to Nick, and he's like, yeah, I'm not taking a cold shower over here either.
Oh, come on, Nick.
So
goodness gracious.
Yeah, that was something special. To say the least. But Pheasant Fest was a cool show, dude. You got to see a bunch of people. And help Nick run his podcast, film his podcast, Gun Nut Yourself. It was a fun time. But other than that, it's just we get back and it was kind of funny. Like when I left, it was like 70 something degrees. Great weather.
Yep.
I get to Nick's house, cold front hits. We had to go to Kentucky for a UTF or UFTA trial, United Field Trial Association. One of their competitions where they're playing, dude, their dogs. I'm not gonna lie, I didn't tell you this. They're playing for $10,000.
Ooh,
they're dogs. And I'm like,
okay,
the cool thing is,
like the winner gets 10 grand
in each category.
Okay,
they're paying out $38,000 total.
Okay,
and they got a club down here. I was like, man, I want to go join. Because the cool thing is, it's just how fast can you find three. They use quail. How fast can you find three quail in each one quail in each section of the field? There's three sections of the field. How fast can you do it? and the least amount of shots you can kill them in when it takes home.
You can show up out there with your daggum.
We can find it with pepper. I just don't know how good I can shoot. So
yeah, you get your old red dot sight on your over under.
Yeah,
everyone out there be laughing at you.
Yeah, absolutely. Until you take home the cash. but yeah, that was cool. But we got up there, dude. It was freezing cold. I had to go to a thrift store because I didn't bring any, like, because it was supposed to be like 60 something when we were up in South Dakota, and they had just got snow like 2 days before we left. And I'm not going to bring a hip. I'll just bring a hoodie. Bro, we got it to Kentucky. Mm. I was freezing death. Had to go to a Goodwill thrift store and go buy a jacket for like $7. And then, made it on out there. So, yeah, good times. But, yeah, other than that, ever since we got back, though, it's been like really nice weather. And I'm sure a lot of you guys in the Southeast have noticed it's like unbelievably nice early spring. Already have buds pop on the trees.
Yep.
Unfortunately, your Bradford pears are just...
Going crazy.
Now. You know, take a chainsaw to every one of them. But it's also some fire burn weather. One of your club or your neighbor, the club across the road from you guys, y'all's neighboring club.
Yep.
They ran a fire, I guess yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday. They ran a fire. And we knew they were going to do it just because we saw them cutting fire breaks and everything on the road.
Yeah.
And that fire looked, I mean, just awesome. And then,
Great around here.
Yeah. And then come to find out today, the adjacent landowner lit a fire.
Yep.
And a pretty big fire too. And like, I mean, it was burning up against the side of the road.
I know, I walked outside and you could see that, like, the smoke plume from my yard out in the distance. I'm like, oh dang,
we got another
someone
one.
Lit up another one.
See, I was like, did that fire jump the road?
I know, that's kind of what I thought too at first. I'm like, were they supposed to do
dude
that?
I was coming back out of town. I was you know, getting to the highway intersection, and I'm like, that does not look like clouds. That definitely looks like smoke. And as I got close, I'm like, oh man, the other side of the road's burning.
But yeah, that's awesome.
They had a courier out there.
So I was curious about that because we've talked about this over the last couple weeks on the podcast. This is Westervelt property. And Westervelt, like, does hunting clubs. They're a timber company. They're one of the few timber companies that still, like, owns their land that they cut timber on. A lot of timber companies just buy wood now. And they just, like, were burning on this place. And we'd been talking about it, and I messaged Cody, and I was like, did the club do that? Like, did the club set this up and ask if they could burn, or did Westervelt just do it? And he said Westervelt just did it. And it turns out they're burning longleaf pine stands. So I've driven past this part of the property for like a couple years now. Mm-hmm. And I've always just assumed it was loblolly. I've never looked real close over there.
Yeah.
But you look and it's longleaf. So they did a full longleaf stand over there.
Is there any longleaves on y'all's property?
No, not that I know of. Unless there's a new clear cut, or it's, you know, 2 or 3 years old now, and there's pines in it. But I think they're all loblollies that they planted in that. So I don't know what they're...
Like over where we turkey hunted?
Yeah, where the turkey was in the cutover last year.
Yeah.
That is... there are some longleafs in it, but there's also loblollies in it, so I don't really know what they're doing. But apparently those stands they burned are longleafs, and so they're managing it with fire. So that's just the timber company. The club didn't have anything to do with it, as I understand it. Mm-hmm. Could be wrong, but I believe that's what the case is. So I'm like, dang, I wish we had some longleafs, because that's pretty cool. And I don't know if they would let us, you know, torch those.
No, I'm telling you, they're not like they're not going to let some outsider do the burn. If there's going to be a fire on that property, they're going to be the one to run it, because that is their money. Okay, hunting lease is cool. That, you know, that ever how many thousand, you know, y'all's probably lease. They probably make $15,000-$20,000 something off of it.
Probably like $25,000.
Yeah, twenty. So for that lease, that's kind of a drop in the bucket for them compared to like all the timber that they got on the property and the rotations and everything. So yeah, I don't think they're gonna let y'all run through there with a drip torch and lighting stuff on fire, because I can see that going sideways real quick and potentially lose that lease in a heartbeat. But it would be awesome to get them out there. But it's kind of interesting, again, kind of seeing them do that. So for anybody out there, again, if you're in a club or have a lease, and it's whether it's Westervelt or one of these other timber companies, it'd be worth reaching out to them and ask them, like, you know, how can we start implementing fire in the landscape and try to talk to them about doing a rotation burn? Because I think if they did it, I think if you had like some members in the club or had all the club members like excited to do it, I think they'd be more willing to. I think probably some of it comes back to like the optics. Like, they went through and burned a property right before turkey season. If people didn't understand the value that fire provides on the landscape, probably you'd have a lot of people in that club pissed off. If they didn't realize like what fire is able to do to kind of reset the habitat and open the ground up and let more forbs and everything kind of grow back up. But I think if you were excited and went to talk to them, and especially some of these smaller timber companies, like we know one of one, and I know they burn some of their places, but they don't have big chunks. Like one of their biggest tracks is probably like 1,500 acres or something like that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I just seen all that getting burned. I was like, oh, get me excited. I was thinking about calling Anthony and be like, hey, when we're out lighting a fire, but we're not going to do a dormant season fire. We're doing a growing season fire this summer.
Yeah, so. There's been a lot of fires going on. We've had really good fire weather these last couple of days, and I'm interested to see what it does for the turkeys, because this other fire was like real close to the house, like to the point where if I'm outside like walking or jogging or whatever, I might be able to hear some turkeys in the morning. So that's kind of exciting.
Yeah,
I hope I get to hear some. I've only heard one so far. I went out and listened the other day, which the intro to Mike Pentecost's podcast this past Monday, I actually filmed that intro when I was out listening for turkeys, and I did end up hearing one, and I just heard that one gobble like that morning. It was kind of cold, but I didn't hear any more, just that one. And it came from a food plot that I was familiar with, and again, talked to Cody, and he's got a camera on that food plot, and there's like five strutters with a bunch of hens. So, you know, they're kind of exactly where you'd expect them to be this time of year. They're down low in food plots. I already got hens as soon as they pitch down. And then one of them, you know, just fired off. Not at a crow or anything, just by himself. But I'm talking about big, long gobble. It was like, whoo. So, yeah. And then other than that, we took the dogs out to the club, went and ran, got some cameras.
Oh, so yeah, yeah.
I pulled a couple cameras that have been sitting out since December. Yeah, just before Christmas is when I put them out. And I haven't checked them yet. Went out and checked them. Had a bunch of bucks on them.
Including.
Bunch of bucks, including the 10-point. So, the 10-point is on every single camera I put out. Every camera I put out in there, I had them, and I had them in daylight on almost all the cameras.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's in there. I mean, there's really not much to do
now.
It's
kind of funny. It's like the time when you thought he disappeared, he just wasn't show up on the cell cameras.
Yeah.
But he was in those spots where you had the non-cellular cameras put out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like all over the place, and you're like, dude.
Yeah, and it's helpful to look back at now, because like there was one Saturday that he daylighted, like at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, just like perfect, you know, that I could have hunted. And it was the day that we were woodcock hunting. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really tore up about it, because where I would have for sure hunted that day, he would have winded me. he was about 100 yards downwind of where I was going to be sitting.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, it is what it is. Because it wouldn't have occurred to me to hunt that spot. And the direction that he came from was interesting too.
Well, you said you had him on a line, right?
Kinda. Yeah, he came through this one spot maybe four or five times. He came through two or three times in daylight. And each time I went back on Ventusky, which is like a weather map. Mm-hmm. It's super, super useful. And I went back, and you can go look at historical data. So I went and looked at the wind direction for those days. And both times that he was walking through this thinned pine stand where it's thick under there, he was walking like wind to back. So wasn't wind in his face or anything, cruising for does. You know, he was just kind of walking through there. And both times it was wind to back, which was kind of interesting. I don't really know if that means anything. I don't think it does. But it's interesting to know that he's coming through there. And also one of those cameras was just absolute spikes gone crazy. It was...
Spike fest,
dude. I mean, spikes galore. If you wanted to go shoot you an Alabama 11-point, this is the place to do it. And they were just in there harassing does from like January 1st to like January 28th, which is when the camera died. Every day, just chasing does, acting crazy, just like running around, like flinging all over the place. It was crazy, acting goofy, acting like a bunch of spikes, you know. And then there's a couple other bucks that were walking around in there that are up and comers. One in particular, really cool buck. His antlers, like his G2s kind of swoop back real far, and his main beams swoop forward. So he's just like a really unique, cool looking rack. Clean 8-point, mm-hmm. like a good buck, but obviously a young deer. Mm-hmm. Really hope he makes it. Cody had mentioned that he saw where a buck had gotten run over, and it was a smaller buck. So I texted it to him. I was like, hey, you didn't this is funny. You'll get I don't know if I told you this. I sent Cody a video of that buck. I'm like, hey, this isn't the one that got run over, is it? And he's like, no, I don't think it is. And then he sent me a video of the 10-point in that exact spot. And he's like, I think our cameras are on the same tree. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And I guess he had pulled his camera. The video on the 10 point was like on December 15th. I put the camera on that exact tree on December 22nd. So he must have pulled it out. But he's like, yeah, I made that scrape right there.
Over,
I'm like,
over Cody's mock scrape.
Dude, I didn't know that was Cody's mock scrape. Looking back, it should have been obvious. It was too perfect of a scrape, you know? But anyways, that was kind of hilarious. I was like, well, I guess we're both all over him.
Yeah, it's like, got it pinned down, boy.
Got him pinned down. So
it's good, some good competition there. That's yep. hilarious. Yeah, no, that's, you know what's funny is, like, you see that on Public Land a good bit, like, well, in a group thread that mm-hmm. we've got, found out some old boy, I think on another piece of Public Land, you put a camera out in back in October or something like that, because you're trying to go back in November and hunt. Okay. And I think you put a camera in an, well, it was in a general area where some other guys were hunting, and they were a little ticked off, supposedly, that some professional podcaster had come in there.
Oh,
ran cameras. And come to find out, that dude's also one of the dudes hacking trees down and stuff for some of his cameras.
Oh, yeah, he sawed down some big old trees. Like, you get in big trouble for that where he was at. Yeah, and he got me on camera for sure. I gave him a thumbs up on the camera. I don't know why he's so upset about everything.
I don't know.
Should have flipped it off, apparently.
Man. Hey, you should have pulled a backsleeve where you just go and like, right, I'm just going to delete that one photo off the camera.
Yeah, I think did he get Shane too?
I don't know.
Everybody hunts that spot though. I mean, like, dude, that's one of those community holes.
Yeah. It's like a good crappie hole. Everybody knows about it.
Yeah, everybody knows about that spot. But I had a camera in there too that no one messed with, so.
That you know of.
That I know. Well, if they messed with it, they left some pretty nice pictures on there. Yeah. Put it that way.
Well, you know, it'll be like that sometimes. No, that's hilarious, though. That, like, I don't know. People get other guys on camera. I'm like, dude, you're on public land. Like, kind of is what it is. Kind of goes into what we just realized. I think we never talked about this, but the state announced the day before. So there's a regulation that nobody knew about in Alabama.
Yeah, I think this is a misstep by the DNR.
Little shady.
I wouldn't call it shady.
I think they should have put that out.
Well, yeah, they should have put it out. I don't think it's necessarily shady. I think it was just a breakdown of communication. So anyways, it was a new regulation that they put in I guess 2023. So the new regs come out, I guess, in the summertime. And then for the coming like hunting year, I guess, which starts in the fall, ends in the, you know, summer of the next year. So 2023, last year in the summertime, they enacted where you can't have a cell camera on a wildlife management area between basically turkey season. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the exact dates, but from March 1st through whenever.
Yeah.
And yeah, they didn't put it on the WMA map.
Yeah.
Any of the WMA maps. They didn't put it in the digest, which is like the book that has all the regulations in it.
Yep.
And you can go find the law on the books, but you got to go to the website. You got to pull up the actual like code, you know, like the law, mm-hmm. and you got to open it. And I had to like control F search the term or whatever. And I found it on page like 87 or something. And I'm just like, guys. And what pissed everyone off is they made a Facebook post about it.
On February 29th.
29th.
Leap day, leap year, whatever.
Like after dark, too.
After dark.
So it's like, guys, you've got 6 hours to get your cameras.
They made a post, like literally 6 hours until, you know, midnight, you know, first, you know, March 1st, that you're not allowed to have trail cameras.
Mm-hmm. Or,
is any trail cameras, not just cell cameras.
No. It's cell cameras.
Okay, my bad. Sorry.
So, look, I know everyone was upset, but read and comprehension, guys. All you have to do is read it.
Yeah.
It is cell cameras. But, it's not, because everyone in the comment was like freaking out about that. It is cell cameras only.
Yeah. But you can't have cell cameras starting March 1st. And the comments were unbelievable. Guys are like, well, it looks like I'm going to be up for the next 10 hours driving 300 miles round trip to go pull my cell cameras.
Oh, yeah. That's what I mean. Like, just like very poorly handled, in my opinion. Like, I don't think, you know, everyone's like, oh, they're just doing this. They can steal cameras or write tickets. I'm like, I don't know about that, because at least the game wardens that I know, if you were out there on, like, you know, the following Saturday, like March 5th or whatever, getting your cell cameras, like, I can't imagine them writing you a ticket unless you're a douchebag to them. And, you know, there's probably game wardens out there that would. You know, they're not all super nice guys, but the ones that I know are all really nice guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, but I think that was just an awful job of communication by the, and it looks bad too. I mean, I guess they, I don't know. It's like, did they realize, like, oh my gosh, we never put this on? Because, like, that is something you should put on the WMA map.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely.
It, something that wide ranging that that affects that many people, that's that big of a change, like, that should go on the WMA map. Mm. I don't know why you wouldn't put that on the WMA map. But, anyways, yeah, so that caused a little bit of a firestorm with everyone was pretty upset about that one.
Yeah.
Pretty upset. So I didn't have any cell cameras on WMA, so I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, no.
Didn't affect me. But if I did, there's one place in particular that if I had a camera on and this place was a WMA, I would have had a very bad time going to get that camera. Because mm-hmm. it's still there. I'm not getting those cameras for a while.
Yep.
Mm. Anyways.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Actually, on that note, a listener of the podcast, he does like shift work and everything, and was able to get off. And like on the, I think it was the 11th or 12th. I don't know what the guy was doing. Guy was wearing blaze orange. I think he was carrying a gun. It was after small game season went out. Well, when squirrel season goes out, the same as rabbit, right? Now,
yeah.
Well, it was
like March 4th.
It was after that, and he's walking around with a gun, and like camo and blaze orange, and he like went up and like pointed at this dude's cell camera, and then went up and like. Next thing you know, the cell camera's looking at the ground.
Oh,
and
dude.
The guy was like, I just want to know, did someone steal that camera? Because I live like 3 hours away from that camera. I haven't been able to come get it yet. And yeah, it was, I'm like, and then I think it went offline.
Yeah, probably not there anymore, bud.
Yeah.
That's a bummer. Wow. I wonder what he was doing.
I obviously
doesn't care. If he's out there like gun hunting after season, I guess he doesn't care about stealing a camera.
He was trying to hunt that. Third rut, you know.
That's right. They're still chasing.
They're still, if they're chasing, I'm hunting. Oh man. I saw that. I was like, oh dude, I can't imagine. I mean,
man, yeah. When they dropped that, I was like, there's no way I missed this. And so I went back. I went to the digest and I flipped through every page mm-hmm. and then I'd like downloaded it and searched the whole document for the terms. Couldn't find it. Went to a couple different WMA maps, couldn't find it on any of those, and then I finally ended up finding it in the law book or whatever, like section da-da-da, whatever. Like, you know, like, what? Page 87. I'm like, guys, come on.
Yeah.
You know? And then I'm sure they got just torched on their email and everything.
Oh, yeah.
I bet they
their messages.
Oh, or their messages.
We know the person that...
Yeah, we know all. Yeah, we know all.
Social media. I bet you they got
torched.
a bunch.
But
messages.
I mean, they kind of brought it on themselves. I mean, I don't understand how you could, you know, anything different.
I feel like because of that, they should have had a grace period. Like,
oh yeah,
2 weeks. You know, 2 weekends for guys. You know, if they can't get out other than like maybe a Saturday to go try to get all their cameras out.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's it's March 13th, so, you know, by this Saturday, you should be able to get your camera. I mean, people are busy, especially, you know, if you live on one side of the state or if you live out of state and you want to, like, go get yourself, which a lot of guys are just going to leave them mm-hmm. and, you know, not mess with it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I can't blame them.
Yeah.
Especially being this short notice or whatever, but I'd be curious to know if anybody has gotten written a ticket.
Ooh.
I would be very curious to know. If you were written a ticket within like 14 days or so of that being going into effect, I would have a real problem with it. Yeah. I would. Especially, you know, if I was the one getting the ticket. I mean, I'd be pretty upset about that. So anyways, look, I get it. Like it's our job as hunters to know the regulations and everything. But how, like, realistically speaking, how many people do you know that go and read the actual law, like 100-whatever-page law book, and notice the changes year to year?
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty cumbersome, and I don't know anybody who's ever done that.
Yeah, I mean, most of our stuff is, like, just checking. Like, if you're on WMA, checking the regs when the new maps come out. Because every time, it seems like every couple of years, something fine-tuned changes. Like, there's changed turkey season. When turkey season opened up, and you know how many birds you can kill, like you only kill one in the first 10 days, and then after that, you can only kill two per piece of public land, all that mm-hmm. stuff. Which I'm pretty certain on one piece I was hunting last year, I think some boys camped out the whole time and shot all their birds. Because I'm like, you boys have been here for a long time, every day,
probably,
and
probably,
yeah,
would not surprise me at all,
yeah. So anyway, but yeah, it's like, you know, checking the regs, because in Alabama, I don't know, I'm trying to think. I mean, most states have this. I know, like, Arkansas has this, Georgia has this, especially, like, online. You go look up a specific piece of state ground the state manages, and it'll have, like, specific regulations on what's required on that place. And, of course, understanding, you know, that will tell you your licenses you'll need. You know, you got to make sure you check, on, like, on the actual website or, like, the handbook itself or the digest, figure out what license you need. But, like, for, like, being on a specific property, it typically tells you what you can, can't do. Because there's some pieces of public land you can't run trail cameras on.
Yeah.
Like, at all. And some old boys, one listener shot a big deer and some old boys.
Yep.
Showed their hands, and they had cameras on a place you weren't supposed to have trail camera on. And showed this buck that was, and they named the place. I'm like, are you that bright, guys? Like, really? Like,
ain't the sharpest knife in
like,
the drawer.
If you hunted there for, I mean, I've never even hunted there, but like, I knew like, that piece of public land and some others in that area, like you can't run trail cameras on, and you're just putting it out there on social media for everybody, everybody and their mother to see. So,
you know. Yeah, it happens. That's pretty goofy.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah. If you know someone who maybe got a ticket about that, I'd be very curious for you to write in. I'd like to know how that went down. If there's anybody out there who's gotten one so far, that would be very interesting to know. Which it seems like that would be a pretty difficult thing to catch. You know, like, because I don't know how they would necessarily go about enforcing that unless they caught you with a cell camera, you know, out on the property or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how they would enforce that. But anyways, a lot of people like the what do you think about the regulation itself? Out of curiosity, like, basically what they're trying to do is make it to where people can't like turkey hunt via cell camera.
Yeah.
So like, you get a picture of a gobbler down the road on the, you know, in the field or whatever, and you just hop in your truck and run down there and shoot him.
Yeah.
What's your opinion on the reg itself?
It doesn't bother me one bit because I've never even considered using cell cameras to like do that with.
Yeah.
Like my thing is, what I feel bad for is the guys who were trying to get maybe a little bit more postseason data for whitetails.
Yeah.
And figuring out like what deer made it, and then like moving cell cameras around in the area to try to figure out, you know, because a lot of our deer don't drop antlers until March, mid-March.
10 points still holding.
Yeah, I mean, mid-March until even early April. Like, I found fresh shed. I found a fresh shed with blood on the pedicle April was 1st, 2nd, 3rd, something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think a lot of people would like to be able to use cell cameras in order to try to find, you know, what deer made it, trying to scout new areas, stuff like that. But I don't really understand. I mean, I can see how someone would want to use trail cameras for turkeys, but it's just like they don't have giant home ranges. Like, listen for them, find the scratch, and go try to kill them. So, yeah, it's not a big issue. But I'll tell you one thing. I'll put a bet down right here.
Uh-oh.
Let's see how long it takes for Alabama to go like with Kentucky, because Kentucky just outlawed, or it was on the docket. Maybe it's not confirmed yet. There was an announcement that Kentucky was looking to ban cell cameras on all public land for 2024
season, really?
Deer season.
Oh, wow.
So they're kind of going with what Kansas is doing.
Okay.
I wonder at what point more and more states go that route for deer. Whether it's like, or just period, just ban them outright.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. I don't know. I'd be kind of curious to ask.
It always makes me wonder.
Friends up in Montgomery.
Yeah, when that pops off, makes me wonder, like, what kind of confrontations have been had.
Yeah.
In order to, like, bring that about. Because I always feel like that's something they don't just pull out of their hat.
Yeah.
I feel like.
There's a reason.
Yeah, there's a reason. Like, there's some kind of confrontations that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
Police reports, I don't know, something that popped off that, you know, makes them be like, okay, well, we're just not gonna allow cell cameras.
We're just not gonna mess with it anymore. Yeah. I don't know. That's a good point. I'd be pretty curious to see how that ends up shaking out.
What would you guys do if they didn't allow cell cameras on your public land, no matter what state you're in?
Do you
use cell cameras? Or do you just use non-cellular cameras, or do you not use cell cam or do you not use trail cameras, period?
Yeah, I'd be curious on the YouTube comments. People chime in on that. Was it Kansas? Does Kansas allow you to use normal cell?
No trail cameras.
No trail cameras, period.
Period.
Wow. Yeah. Is that just, on like walk in
public,
and public?
Any public access, yeah. You can't use trail cameras.
Yeah. Wow. That's wild, dude. Yep. That is pretty wild.
It's all about visual observation and what you can find sign and go hunt them like a woodsman.
Yeah. What do you think of that one?
I mean,
would you like that or not like that in Alabama?
I wouldn't like it at all. I mean, I don't know about you guys.
I like my truck.
I like seeing a photo of a buck, man. It's fun. It like gets you all jazzed up.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's a group of people. It's a vocal minority of individuals who are like, you know, anti trail camera because it takes like the woodsmanship out of the game.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a case there, but also I feel like it's a way to come, if you use it in the right way, to really fine tune woodsmanship on based off the sign you're finding and confirming. To me, it's more like a confirmation of what you find.
Yeah.
Not necessarily like, I'm just going to throw them out everywhere and just see what pops up. It's like, oh, there's a reason I'm putting a camera here based off the sign I'm seeing and figuring out, you know, what reason potentially, you know, a buck's going to come through there. Again, for turkeys, I wouldn't necessarily ever use a trail cam for turkeys. Like, mm-hmm. We did a little bit last year in your club in one spot just because we found some scratch, but it was just like, okay, cool. Like they're there. We already knew they're there because the sign's there. They're not really leaving
there. We put out cameras last year on the club, and you know how many turkey pictures I got? Zero. I didn't get a single one. at the road intersection,
I'm talking about the hardwood track.
Oh, I didn't get a single turkey picture in turkey season on that one.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't near turkey. Yeah, it was all before
turkey season. It was before turkey season. I got a bunch of coyotes and deer on that camera.
And people driving.
And people driving illegally on the club. But but yeah, I don't really have a problem with the reg on the cell cameras for turkey things. It's just how they delivered it left a lot to be desired, put it that way. But anyways, like I'll be curious to see if it's on a WMA map next year. I mean, that's kind of what I was getting at earlier. It's like, you know, no one's going and reading through the big book of laws, and I just feel like that's something to be too easy to. Why not throw it on the WMA map? You know, maybe by the time that law was like enacted or passed, or they decided they were doing that, maybe the final drafts of the WMA map, but they could still put it on the digital one. No, I feel like
if I had to guess, it was on the back burner. They approved it late and they forgot about it, and they're like, "Oh crap, we have to put this out there." Like, we got to put this out there. Like, yep. We've informed the game wardens. We've informed everybody except the public. We got to get this out there.
Yeah.
And the firestorm happened.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Brutal.
It's, you know, it is what it is. That's probably one of the biggest critiques you hear from most people that hunt in different states is lack of communication with state agencies. And I know some are a lot better than others. Some just get real busy. Some just forget to publish certain data. Like, I've dealt with that in a couple different states where it's like hard, like it's really hard to find data. Or like one of the worst things is, and I've had this happen in Tennessee, I've had this happen in Alabama, haven't had this happen in Arkansas, but Tennessee and Alabama have had this happen. When you look at the new maps for WMAs or pieces of public land, like that state manages, and looking at the individual regs, looking at the hunting season dates and stuff, how often you search for that stuff and it shows you like an old map.
Oh, that's terrible.
And like old regs from like 2 years ago. Like, it happened in Alabama one time. I was looking for something. This is before they came out with the app. And it was like maybe 2021. And it was showing like a map from like 2 years previously with like old regs. And it was showing pieces of public that were not public anymore, that they had been sold. And it's like, okay, well, this is very confusing.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's one of those things, like, once you publish it, like, it's on the internet, but it's like one of those things that I feel like there's a way to be able to clean that up a little bit so it's not just left out there, because it still takes you to the right website. You're on the right website, like Outdoor Alabama app, all that, or outdooralabama.com, whatever, and it looks legit, and then you look at the fine print, and it says, you know, 2018, 2017. And I'm like, well, this is not helpful.
You're like, oh man, turkey season does open on March 15th after all.
Yeah.
Let's go.
And it's like, I mean, you got to be so careful. You got to make sure you're looking, there's a date on there. But like, I've had that with Tennessee the same way, where I was looking at different regs, and it's like, it wasn't like they had published like season dates and stuff, but it wasn't, I guess, widespread. And you go on the website, and it was like the year previous. Dates and seasons and all that kind of stuff. And if you would have done that, we would have gotten in a lot of trouble. Houndstooth Game Calls Dixie Hen Slate was just voted the overall best turkey call by Field and Stream Outdoors, and trust me, it's super easy to run and be extremely dynamic when you're in the turkey woods. Now, we've mentioned a couple of these calls in the past, like the Spur Master and the Success Call in a past episode with both Gary Vines and Lyle Gilbert of Houndstooth Game Calls. And it was funny enough, y'all actually bought every Spur Master call and Success Call they had. Now, pay attention to their website. They're going to have some more come up in stock in the next few days. So when they come available, make sure you get one if you did not purchase one before they sold out last time. Both the Spurmaster and the Success Call are fantastic for hunting high-pressure turkeys, whether you're on a hunting club where you have a lot of other members hunting those same turkeys, or if you're on public land. Again, both those calls will make you sound a little bit different from everybody else and be a lot more subtle in your calling technique and be able to really help close those distance with those gobblers. So if you want to give Houndstooth Game Calls a try, go to houndstoothgamecalls.com. Use the promo code SOP24. Again, promo code SOP24 for 15% off houndtoothgamecalls.com. Man, Mark's Outdoors is your one-stop shop for everything outdoor and shooting related. They're a family-owned business that's been around for over 40 years now, been serving the Birmingham area, but now they have opened their doors to everyone across the United States through their online store. Again, me and Andrew have been using Mark's Outdoors for years now. They have unbelievable supplies of literally anything that we need, we can pick up from Mark's Outdoors. They're even carrying different saddle companies, sticks, platforms, the whole nine yards at Mark's Outdoors. And again, if you don't live in Alabama and you don't want to make the drive to Birmingham, you can go over to their website, marksoutdoors.com, and actually shop on their online store to get awesome deals on different products that you may be needing right now and be able to get to you in a very timely manner as well. So give Mark's Outdoors a try. We promise you, you'll enjoy them. They have unbelievable customer service and some of the best guys in the industry. TruLock Chokes has been made in Georgia since 1981 and offering a wide range of chokes, over 2,000 different chokes for all kinds of shooting activities. You might be wondering why you'd want to purchase a TruLock choke, and it's to improve your shotgun performance. Absolutely guaranteed. And as a great example, we have Andrew Maxwell here. And Andrew, you've had some pretty good luck, again, kind of switching out chokes and trying out the Precision Hunter choke from TruLock. So, Andrew, what's been your experience so far?
Yeah, I've used the same choke for several years now. I never really thought much of it, and I got the TruLock choke in. I patterned my gun with the first choke at 30 and 50, and then I switched to the TruLock and changed from 30 to 50. And the 50-yard pattern on my gun with the TruLock choke is unbelievable. Like, everybody's jaws were dropping. Like, when we were out there with Mike and Sam, we were all super impressed. I mean, it's throwing a better pattern at 50 now than it was throwing at 40 before my old choke.
And Andrew, you're shooting the Precision Hunter choke from TruLock. It's a great option. Same chokes I have in my shotgun. So guys, if you want to give TruLock a shot this spring, you can head over to TruLockChokes.com. That's TruLockChokes.com. You can also use the promo code Southern at checkout at TruLockChokes.com and save 10% on your order. Again, give TruLock a shot this spring, especially if you're not happy with the performance of your shotgun, and shoot with a more deadly pattern with TruLock.
Yeah, definitely. So, definitely. Interesting. Well, let's hit some Q&As on this old podcast
awesome.
Here.
Appreciate everybody submitting Q&As. Again, I'm trying to answer some turkey Q&As, but if you still have some deer questions, you can write those in. Again, there's a link down in the show notes below on the podcast and on YouTube as well, where you can click the link, and it takes you directly to the website where you can submit your question to be answered on the podcast.
All right. We're going to start out with a comment from our buddy Kevin Tullis. He's a Southern Outdoorsman podcast alum. He was on episode 206 and 342 all about deer hunting, and it was about one of those was called Find and Hunt Buck Sanctuaries with Kevin Tullis.
We didn't do a pig. I thought we did a pig.
Yeah, I'm getting to it. Lord have mercy.
Oh, my bad.
and then the next one we did was all about finding a hunting club and what to look for and how to join one if you're unfamiliar with that process.
That's a good episode.
So that's episode 206 and episode 342. Those are excellent episodes.
And by the way,
Kevin's known for like going to hunting clubs and getting kicked out
for killing big bucks.
Yeah.
And be like, the only guy on the club. So, by the way, if you're searching for like Kevin's episodes, if you're on Apple Podcasts, it is so easy to do this, guys. Bottom right hand corner says like your library. You click on your library and there's a search bar at the top. Just type in Kevin Tullis. Okay.
Yes.
And it's T U L L I S. And it will pull up all of the episodes for like this podcast, Southern Outdoorsman, that he's been on. It's that easy. You don't have to scroll all the way down and try to find episode number. Just search their name in the search bar, and it'll pull up every episode he's been on.
100%. Episode 397 we did with him was on hog hunting. So if you're interested in doing a little hog hunting in the off season, you know, go listen to episode 397 with Kevin Tullis. All right. He said, why wouldn't you stay in the club? Grass is not always greener on the other side. When I got in a club, I hunted it every weekend so I could learn the land and how the deer move it. And you have not hunted it like that, yet you are on them. But there is more in there in some spots than I bet. and got 2 year in a row now. That's when you put the hammer down and kill big deer by the truckloads. So, Kevin, I'm staying in. I'm staying in, I promise.
Yeah.
When Kevin and Alan and like everybody I know who's like a big buck killer is like, what are you doing? I'm like, okay. I'm for sure staying in. I'm for sure staying in. Especially after these camera pulls, because there, man, there's a couple bucks. There's a couple, like three in particular, that are just, if they make it through summer and they don't get run over by a truck, that's really about the only thing that would kill them around here.
Yeah.
You could say EHD. We actually did have a little bit of EHD, blue tongue, down here last year, which is very, very rare for this part of Alabama. I mean, we do not see that like how you see it in like Kansas mm-hmm. or other places. And we never found any dead deer from it, but we did have some deer killed that had the hooves that are all jacked up mm-hmm. from it, and that's, you can tell they survived it.
Then someone,
Blakely killed one that was like that, and Austin Broadhead
Austin
killed one
was
that
the one
was
I was
like
thinking
that.
If he killed a buck, the head one.
But anyways, so if they make it, they're going to be really good ones next year, and I got them on daylight, on camera a bunch of times, so excited about that. All right, this is from Tyler Mantooth in Tennessee.
That's an interesting last name.
It's a strong last name.
Did you say that right? Oh, okay. Yeah, wow.
When scouting, do you seem to see correlations in deer and turkey movement? It seems like the lease I hunt in East Tennessee, the travel patterns are similar between the deer and turkey. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work. And it was great meeting y'all at the NWTF show. So I remember you, Tyler. It was good meeting you, too. I think I do. Especially when it comes to maybe saddles.
Yeah, topography.
Topography specifically. Like, I definitely see correlations.
I don't think you're going to see a turkey walk a ditch up. They're always going to try to get on a hillside
yeah.
where they can pitch off.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't think you're going to find them in a low spot going up, but like working up the edge of a saddle, yeah. Also, I've seen it in the fall. Like, we've had a hunt in Tennessee where like we found feed trees where I shot that pocket doe. And shot a doe. Like, literally, we weren't even set up in the tree. Like, we're hanging stands.
Explain pocket doe. Explain that term.
She's small enough you could fit in your back pocket. not really, but small.
Close.
Yeah, fine.
But close.
And anyways, like, we weren't even set up in the tree, and this doe and doe fawn comes in. Shoot, doe fawn. Just, yeah. Anyways.
Just
like,
awful.
We weren't even set up. Like, I think we saw stuff on the ground. Like, I had my bow. You, like, gave me my bow. I knocked an arrow shot. Anyways. But like,
I know, and there's this giant doe in front of it. And I'm like, shoot that one. And you just shoot the... I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it kind of started. I didn't want to text the heart shot. She was walking away. She thought something was up.
So you text the heart shot the fawn on accident.
Oh, she's
it was
out.
Bad. Video, it was awful.
The video's on YouTube.
I wanted to take it down. It's so bad.
You go watch it. But anyways, but later that afternoon, we had a group of, young bucks come by, and then a group of turkeys come through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they were all hitting the same feed trees. Like, turkeys came through, were scratching around, picking up acorns and all that kind of stuff. Bucks came through, you know, picking up acorns. And I see that a lot in the falls. And it's also... We've talked about this. I feel like in some areas, especially if you have high turkey numbers, if you don't have high turkey numbers where you're at, I don't think this plays a part. But if you live in an area with high turkey numbers, I think the deer, just everything in the woods wants to eat a turkey. Okay?
Yeah, 100%.
Owl, all kinds of like avian predators, coyotes, bobcats, you name it, stuff wants to eat a turkey. And if a deer hears a turkey just kind of like doing their thing, walking, you know, clucking, purring, maybe doing some soft yelps, I think it puts the deer at ease. And, like, we've done that. Like, you've walked in before natural voice shelter, and we've walked right in on deer bedded down
yeah.
at 20 yards. Mm-hmm. And they, like, let us get right on top of them before they saw us. So, yeah, travel patterns, I would just say, like, you know, they're going to work ridges. They're going to come up and down ridge points, up through saddle, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Thermal hubs, bowls.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's a big one.
And it's like, and if it's a bigger hub, they'll get down the bottom of it if they can kind of see. But if it's thick and stuff like that, it's like the opposite of a deer. Like, a turkey wants to be able to see a whole bunch. They're not going to be, like, in super thick, nasty crap just because, like, you know, they can't see a predator that's right on top of them. But, like, yeah, like get down a big thermal hub, like a big drainage system where, like, a bunch of points come down. He might be gobbling down the bottom. But typically, if he's down there, it's probably going to be pretty wide open.
Yeah.
Or he's going to be up on a little ridge point up around him. But, I mean, yeah, you could say, you know, they kind of similar travel patterns. Just not so much getting into thick stuff.
Yeah, that's why I've talked about a couple weeks in a row now that turkey hunting is also a really good way to scout for deer too, because they relate to each other so much. It's like you said, especially when it relates to things like saddles, benches, If you're in East Tennessee, that's one to look out for.
Old thermal logging roads.
Old logging roads, long finger ridges that come out. Yep. And so naturally, as you're kind of chasing turkeys around, you're going to be running into all kinds of deer,
well,
son.
Me and Catman, Jonathan Bone, we were turkey hunting part of Alabama. This is like 2018, maybe 2019, probably 2019. And we went to like one of these like hub points in the morning, and
I think that's on our YouTube channel, and I remember it because you gave it to me to edit. I wasn't there with y'all that day, and I remember like it was before daylight, and I think we had like the green light on the camera.
It had like infrared
where you could turn it on, and you turned it on, and it was Jonathan standing there, and he's like, when I see other hunters in the woods, I like to cut my light off and just run right at them, real creepy like, to scare them off. And, I mean, like, deadpan, serious as a heart attack. And, dude, I died laughing because I was, like, not expecting that at all.
Yeah. But, like, where I'm going at with that, the point we made it to listen from, and we didn't hear any birds that morning, there was a big four-point side shed laying right there. Uh-huh. Like, right where we were going to listen to, which would have been, like, a really good roost spot, just ended up not hearing any birds that morning.
I found a bunch of sheds turkey hunting.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, you naturally, especially like in hill country, you kind of end up in the same spots you may would find like some kind of bedding activity. And like, it's a good time to find sheds. It's about the only time I found sheds in Alabama is turkey hunting.
Yeah, definitely. All right, next up, this is from Joshua Anderson in Texas. He said, what do y'all think of the muzzleloader only season in Texas? Basically, we cannot bow hunt during this late season. I don't know of this happening anywhere else. In muzzleloader seasons across our great nation, we can bow hunt, except in Texas. What could possibly be the motivation behind this? It is our extremely long gun season prior to, or is it our extremely long gun season? I reached out to Texas about this, and I was like, why? And Texas said, and I quote, the Texas DNR said, the same reason you cannot use a muzzleloader during archery season. They are specialized seasons for particular means of take. So, there you have it.
Yeah.
So...
I don't complain. I love muzzleloader hunting. God, it's fun.
Well, if you don't have a muzzleloader, though, it kind of sucks.
I'll get you a muzzleloader. They're cheap.
Well, listen, I don't know.
You go to Walmart.
I understand the aggravation.
I can understand. Okay, I get it, too. But, dude, muzzleloaders are so fun to shoot, okay? They're just, it's a blast, in my opinion. It used to be very frustrating, and then I figured out how to use it, like, more proficiently, and I'm like, oh, this is a good time. But, like, right now, this is a great time. Actually, we might have missed it. When deer season typically ends, if you have any Walmart Supercenters, like wherever you're at, typically in the Southeast, you got a Walmart Supercenter somewhere close by, they sell CVA muzzlers. And you can go pick up, I saw somebody yesterday post in a CVA group I'm in, a Wolf, CVA Wolf muzzler, scoping everything for like $110.
Oh, wow.
They had it marked down like $130, $150.
That's what I'm talking about.
So it's like you can find them. Like this is the best time to find one. You can go to a bunch of different gun shops or especially like big box sporting goods stores, and you could probably get them like on sale because they don't sell super great anyways, but you can get, and this is the time of year typically I go buy bullets, powder, everything. You get it right
now.
Yeah,
this is when I got my muzzleloader last year. It's not the Wolf.
You get Optima.
I got an Optima.
The next version.
For like $225.
Scope and everything. Yeah.
It was on sale and I was like, yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah. I bought my Acura, just the Acura. Now I bought mine off, I think, Gun Broker. That's another place. You can get them off Gun Broker for a pretty good deal. Mm-hmm. But I bought mine, the Acura, which is the top tier for the break action muzzlers they have.
And you can, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can order those house.
It's not an FFA. It's not an FFL weapon. It's not classified as a firearm.
Yeah.
So you
don't have to do the little 4473 and all that.
Yeah, it gets shipped right to your house. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. But yeah, I understand the frustration. Actually, there's a similar thing. I believe, I don't know if it's still like this, but I believe it was Missouri back in...
Missouri.
Back in, I think it was either high school or college. Me and Zach were wanting to go hunt there. And I think we were wanting to go like either on Thanksgiving break or something. And the way that the seasons fell is like right in the middle of the trip, gun season started.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You had to buy a completely different license.
And you could still bow hunt gun season, but you had to bow hunt under your gun permit. And the permits were like
$225.
So we could go there and bow hunt for, you know, $225 plus whatever. But then if you wanted to keep going throughout the week, you had to buy the gun permit too. So that jacked it up another, and we couldn't afford that.
Yeah.
And so we never went because of that. And we're like, we even called them and everything. I'm like, why can't I just bow hunt on my bow hunting tag during gun season? And they were like, because you can't. I was like, crap.
Yeah.
So I still haven't hunted Missouri to this day. which is aggravating.
Yeah.
Very aggravating.
Well,
that's how they keep us riffraff out of there.
Keep them pores out.
That's how they keep the pores out. Okay. Moving on. This is from Spotify, so you can leave a comment on our Spotify podcast feed.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the same way you can on our YouTube feed. So you can leave comments. We got a bunch of those. And we got some in the hopper. I think this is the first one we've done. So his name is Cutter from Spotify. He commented on episode 553 on Spotify. He said, I'm 16 and I hunt 90 acres of hill country in Alabama. And I have a lot of big bucks on camera, but struggle with the right stand locations. What are y'all's thoughts? So if you've got 90 acres of hill country, there's a couple things that run through my head. The one thing that I would say is if you got 90 acres to hunt and you're struggling with stand locations, I would look for the thick cover and terrain features, but I would also look maybe before you get too hung up on that of how you can access the property and make sure that you're setting up your stand locations and spots that you can actually get to without spooking deer. That's the one thing to start with. But then also, I mean, dude, compounding features are it. That's I think what we talk about all the time is just find where a terrain feature meets a habitat feature, or where two terrain features meet each other. Like, do you have a cutover that maybe is on the property or that borders the property, or a pine thicket that's either on the property or borders the property? Like, hit those property boundaries because there's going to be a habitat edge right there most likely. And once you find that habitat edge, see if you can find a terrain edge that comes out of it. Maybe it's a draw that comes down out of a pine thicket that empties out onto your property. Maybe it's a saddle on a road, like a boundary road or something like that. There's a lot of different things, but what sticks out to you?
First thing is, when someone says a small property like that, don't rely on baiting in order to try to kill one of those deer.
Yeah.
And like, he didn't say anything about it, but I would have to guess he probably ran some corn piles. If you got 90 acres, that's as big as our family farm. It's in very gentle rolling hill country. It's not like big hills.
Yeah.
Like, biggest hill is probably 60 feet out there, and they're real gentle rolling. So, and Anthony has two different bait sites. It's feeders that he's got set up, but it's the hunting. He doesn't hunt the feeders, if that makes any sense. He hunts the travel corridors coming to and from the feeders, to and from the food plot, stuff like that. If you get 90 acres, like you said, I mean, access is huge. That's the issue with the farm. It's like, if you have a north wind, you're screwed because you gotta walk in from the north. It makes it super tough to hunt that place with a north wind. So access is a real big thing. And also, another reason why, like, if you're 16 years old, I don't know how many stands you have, and you might just be using a climber, but I think hunting mobile on that is going to help you out so much more than having pre-hung stands where you constantly are hunting the same tree over and over again every chance you get, especially, you know, out of school and like hunting the weekends. Staying mobile, whether you're using a climber, using a saddle, using lock-on sticks, whatever you're going to use, I would recommend doing that and just kind of bouncing around. And also, he never said anything, but he's got big bucks on camera. Did he ever see those deer from the stand?
Yeah, that's a really good point. There's not a lot of information on the comment, but like you're saying, I really, like, sitting from here, especially with the information given, it's hard to say, like, hey, this is where you need to put a stand. But the best thing to do is going to be, if you haven't already, just like really walk that property. I mean, you can cover 90 acres in a day pretty easily.
Yeah.
And I mean, really cover it, like, leave no stone unturned, walk the whole thing, take note of where all the deer sign is at, and then kind of overlay that information onto stuff that maybe you hear our guests talk about on this podcast when it comes to habitat features, compounding terrain features, things of that nature. So, you know, take that information that you hear on the podcast and then overlay what you find in the field on top of that, and you got to kind of make it your own, you know, because no two situations are going to be alike. But that's what I would do. I would go walk, especially right now. Again, it's March 13th. We're having a little bit of an early spring, so we're going to be greened up before too long. And I would want to walk it before green up.
Yeah.
For sure, I would want to walk it before green up. And that's going to give you a really good idea of what's on the property.
Look for scrapes.
Look for scrapes. You're going to be able to see scrapes. You're going to be able to see trails really good. You're going to be able to see the rubs very easily. You can see further out through the woods. And it's just going to make it – it's going to be easier to scout it right now because it feels good outside. The bugs aren't terrible yet. And you can see further through the woods as opposed to if you do it a month from now, it's going to be a different experience. It's going to be harder, and you're more likely to miss stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so anyways, that's what I would do.
Sweet.
All right, we got a review to read. I'm gonna let you take this one.
So I got a new review from it's M Outdoors. I thought it was Mo Outdoors, but it's M Outdoors. Titled "Great Podcast, 5 stars." By the way, this is on Apple Podcasts. So guys, if you enjoy these episodes, kind of like this guy right here, M Outdoors, you can go leave us a 5-star written review on Apple Podcasts. Really helps out the show. Actually makes us a little more searchable when y'all leave us reviews. Mm-hmm. And we love to read them on the podcast. So again, titled "Great Review, 5 stars. Just started listening to these guys on the turkey episodes. Really enjoying it so far. There are so many hunting podcasts nowadays, and the topics get kind of overdone and run out of fresh stuff and entertainment. These guys and their guests have been different in a good way. Keeps my attention and plenty of good laughs, too. Keep it up, guys. Sweet.
Appreciate it, man.
Appreciate it, M Outdoors.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
That's very encouraging, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very encouraging.
So, again, appreciate everybody. Again, if you've been enjoying the podcast, leave us a 5-star written review. By the way, appreciate everybody that's been purchasing all the hats. We've sold out pretty much everything that we've got on the table here.
We still got these two. Yep. We got the chocolate chip and orange hats.
Blaze orange, which I love the chocolate chip. And, of course, the lucky Blaze orange hat is notorious for killing some big deer with listeners. But, again, just appreciate everybody's support. Again, buying apparel, leaving us reviews. Sharing the show with everybody. Again, we got some other really good episodes. Actually, we're about to go do a banger here in about an hour or so.
Yes, sir.
Anyways, again, appreciate y'all watching, appreciate y'all listening, and we'll catch y'all back here on next week's episode from the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. And remember, guys, y'all stay southern.
Y'all go ahead and write down the dates, June 28th through June the 30th. Go ahead and just mark those off your calendar so you can be at the Dalton Convention Center in Dalton, Georgia for the 2024 Mobile Hunters Expo. Y'all heard a ton of content from that expo last year that we posted. We talked about it a ton. Look, if you're the kind of person that listens to this podcast, this show was literally made for you. It was literally designed for you, which means you're going to love it. You know, all the best companies in mobile hunting are going to be there. A lot of the best deer killers in the Southeast are going to be there. A lot of our past podcast guests are going to be there. It's going to be an incredible event. And hey, if you've been looking to either get into a saddle or maybe a mobile lock-on setup or just a different kind of tree stand setup, I'm telling you, it's worth the investment to go to this show because they're all going to be there and you will get to try all of them in person before you buy it. So you don't have to order something online and then wait for it and then try it when it comes in to see if you really like it. You're going to get to go put your hands on everything all in one day, test it all out, and figure out exactly what works best for you and have it taken care of before deer season starts. So like I said, go ahead and put it on your calendar, guys. It's a no-brainer. You got to be at the show. Again, it's Friday, June 28th through Sunday, June 30th in Dalton, Georgia. We absolutely cannot wait to meet you guys there and talk hunting. So we'll see you at the 2024 Mobile Hunters Expo in Dalton, Georgia.